I'm Graham Harper, and you're listening to Drive Time on Siren FM with Alex Levchuk.
Thank you very much, Graham. Always nice to have a BAFTA award-winning seal of approval, or indeed, as he would also say...
He's a top racehorse commentator, a fine actor, an all-round good egg. It's Malcolm Tomlinson on the Midweek Drive.
Yay! How are you, Malcolm?
Yeah, chugging away well, thank you, Alex.
Well, as head boy, telephonically speaking, it falls to your good self to have that august responsibility of introducing Professor Gail Vanstone and Professor Brian Winston. Whom do you wish to go to first?
Well, I think I should have a chat with Brian, because I don't think I've ever been on the show before, Alex, with an Emmy Award winner. So, Brian, tell us about this Emmy Award to start with.
Gosh, it's so long ago, I can barely remember.
last century, Brian, but never mind.
Very much last century. I was living in New York, and I made a documentary as part of a series called Heritage, which was a history of the Jewish people. It was not a very good series, but I seem to win an Emmy for writing one of the scripts. In fact, I wrote two of the scripts. I have no idea quite why. All I can remember is we thought about going to get it, and then worked out it was going to cost thousands of dollars to fly to California, so we didn't bother. And then weeks later, we were driving up to the house, and there was a box on the porch, and there it was.
But sure, I thought that these people always treat you like royalty if you were an award winner, and they paid for
you. We do at Lincoln always the time. I wasn't sure that my students give due deference.
In those days, they actually managed to put all the technicians, all the technical awards, were all in a separate ceremony, which actually was a proper dinner, unlike sitting in the Kodak Theatre, which I'm told is a pain in the neck. So this was a proper dinner at the Hilton or whatever. And it was all the technicians and the documentary filmmakers. So I was always very happy about that. I like being a horny-handed son of toil.
Yes, there we are.
An interesting expression.
Yeah, I was just going to say, coining a phrase right in the start of the programme, as is his wont, which is marvellous. I was very excited when Brian, and we booked him for a return visit to the Midweek Drive, also said, would you like to see if Professor Gail Vanstone would actually be interested in coming along as well? Equally, I can tell you're quite excited as well, Malcolm.
Oh, well, I am indeed. Welcome along, Gail. And Gail, you work at York University, is that right?
That's right. Thank you so much. I'm a professor of a program that I created called Culture and Expression.
Tell us some more about that. What is that exactly?
Well, it's a program, it's a cultural studies program, but it really looks at the fine arts. And part of the component of the program makes sure that students get out into the community and go to art galleries. I've taken students to CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation studio, and we've looked at their state-of-the-art equipment, recording equipment, which is apparently the best of its kind in North America.
You might wonder why Gail is taking her students to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, since you announced that she was at York University. But there is, of course, a York University in Canada, indeed Canada's biggest university, and that's where she works.
Cunningly put together there. I don't know. There's also New York as well. It's amazing, really.
Well, there is a link. When York began about 52 years ago, the university we looked to was the University of York. And for quite a while, we had an examination room where PhD and master's students were examined that was full of University of York, gorgeous, beautiful, traditional furniture. Now that furniture has disappeared.
No.
Yes.
Honestly, those Canadians, they'll have anything. Goodness sakes, it's probably a loan.
We think that it is international visitors who were so lured by the thought of the University of York that was the reason the pieces went missing.
See, that's extraordinary.
We wouldn't find any in your house, would we, Gail?
Heavens no.
I just had this sort of note. Obviously, we've got a trauma conference coming up in a few weeks' time here at the University of Lincoln. We've had the conference that's been wrapping up today as well. People are taking off fixtures and fittings, Brian. This could be a whole new area of hobbies, really. It's like going to the hotel and taking the towels, honestly.
Yeah. You better check you've got your trousers on when you leave there today.
Thank you. You just don't go there with respect to the last few weeks we've been having. Malcolm, obviously, people need to know, because next week you will be in the studio. You will be sitting in probably the very same chair that Gail is currently occupying very capably today. But currently, thanks to your daughter and Warner Brothers, interesting link, of course, this, you are going to be riding in a race, actually riding as a jockey in the race on August the 18th. So just share the tale, because even though people might have accessed this online, they maybe aren't aware in Siren Land here at the University of Lincoln and beyond for Lincolnshire why your daughter, after having this little disagreement with Warner Brothers, not a major one, but why effectively you've ended up riding in the race for her.
Yes, well, it's a kind of very long story short. Eleanor, the starlet daughter, is going to be Princess Isabel in the upcoming blockbuster Jack the Giant Killer, which is out next March for Warner Brothers. And last year at the Horse Race Writers' Lunch in London, she was asked if she would ride in a charity race, help raise some money for Racing Welfare and a couple of other worthy charities. And she said, well, of course I will. But then Warner Brothers, quite understandably, weren't too keen on her turning up to do publicity for her film with her arm in a sling or her leg.
I can't understand this. I mean, if Rick Sennett was actually here, I'm sure he would actually say in his day at Warner Brothers, everybody used to just go and the heck with the consequences of pots on limbs and all the rest of the bits and pieces.
Yeah, well, there you go. So to cut a long story short, Eleanor said to Newmarket, look, they're not too keen on me riding in it, but don't worry, my dad will do it. So there you go. And I got a call from Newmarket saying, oh, thanks so much, Malcolm, for agreeing to do the race. It's so great. We can have a commentator in there and an actor as well. And I said, pardon? And they said, oh, you obviously haven't spoken to your daughter today. But no, that's how it came about, and I'm really looking forward to it. It should be fun.
See, I mean, Brian, ever considered actually riding in a race for all the rest of it?
No, I suspect there's no horse strong enough to carry me.
Nonsense. We want to talk about D is for Daring as well, just briefly setting the scene for this, because this is quite a seminal text in any sense of the word, Gail. Our first ever feminist historical analysis of Studio D.
Yes. Studio D was the women's studio in the National Film Board of Canada. It started in 1974 and was closed in 1996. At the time it was in operation, I think it's still fair to say it's the case, it was the only state-supported feminist film studio in the world. Oh. And so it was begun by a visionary employee of the National Film Board, a woman named Kathleen Shannon, who is a very good film editor and filmmaker herself. And she had a vision that there were women across Canada who wanted to make films but had no entry into the industry because they had no training. Huh. And so Studio D was instrumental in running programs across the country, inviting women to come into the studio to work on their ideas. And so in the end, it tracked women's issues. This is the period of second wave feminism. It tracked women's issues for the 22 years that it was around. Oh. But what was interesting about the studio was that women who worked in the studio thought Studio D was wonderful. Academics like me who used the documentary films in our classes loved it. What we didn't understand was a group of independent filmmakers who weren't invited into the studio or who had a different vision, didn't like Studio D, didn't admire the work.
Creative tensions, I suspect.
Right. And so, yeah, it was creative, but it was also very practical. Who got the money?
Oh. And with that, the old moonlight's difficult to actually fund the movies, right. As indeed we're talking about later on the show with Phil Dearness, of course, independent filmmaker and anchor person of the Chilpack Hollywood Hour, indeed director of The Truth Is Out There. I'm sure, Phil, bearing in mind that his broadcasting partner is Dean Hagland, also from Canada. I don't want too interesting lines to say with respect to that. Malcolm, any sort of views with respect to that? Or is it, as an actor, do you just think, well, as long as I'm paid, I don't really care who's actually stamping up the cash?
Yeah. Well, there is that element going through my brain, Alex, I have to confess. But I'm intrigued by the second wave of feminism, Gail, when did that happen? And when did the first wave stop? And has the second wave stopped now? And are we on a third wave? Or what's going on here?
It's now, like 3G in telephones. We're up to 4G now. It's amazing.
No, that's a really smart question, because there will be people who argue that the notion of waves is foolish, but if you look at it in terms of waves, the first wave was the suffragist movement, which was spearheaded in England by a group of women who wanted the right to vote.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one of them threw herself under the king's horse in the Derby, didn't she?
Right. Yeah. And there's a documentary film produced by the National Film Board that actually has footage of that. So I've seen it.
Yeah.
So the second wave happened as an outgrowth of social movements for freedom in North America, black freedom, gay freedom, women's issues. And so really, by the time it hit Canada, it was, the late 60s, early 70s.
Okay.
Must have been a major shock for the Maple Leaf land in general, I would have thought, really, in terms of the third wave suddenly striking along the whole base.
Well, no, the third wave is now.
Indeed. Second wave.
Okay.
But the second wave was really quite interesting, because in Canada, women's issues were talked about across the country. There were a group of rural women who had women's institutes, and so they were certainly interested in women's rights, particularly women's property rights. But women really, it was a time of economic prosperity. Mm. Women wanted equal work for the jobs that they were, equal pay for the jobs that they were doing. And in many places, there were two salary scales.
Yeah. Extraordinary. And, of course, it still occurs in certain issues. There's thankfully not quite as strongly in present days, although maybe it does. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, if you look at the numbers, women's wages still lag behind men's wages at approximately the same percentage that they did 100 years ago.
I'm not asking for any sort of deals or numbers here, Malcolm, but does Eleanor get the same sort of salary as Ewan McGregor? I mean, they're both star billionaires, this Jack the Giant Killer.
I would very much doubt that Eleanor got the same fee as Ewan McGregor.
Oh, never mind.
I don't think it's anything to do with the fact that she's a lady.
just a sort of possible line we can go through on that one. Coming up, we'll be speaking to Dean Forbes, the marketing director of Pharma Nord Nutritional Supplements, about some startling result, even more startling in many ways than the information we've just heard from Gail there about nutrition, selenium, and how deficient we actually are in Britain and Europe in particular about selenium, and how it can actually help in all sorts of ways. We've got Cameron Tilbury with another superlative country music choice. Michelle Monroe is with us. Arthur Weingarten as well. Malcolm, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show today?
It's been very interesting and stimulating. Thank you, Alex.
So in which case would you actually endorse this little statement?
Being a guest on the Midweek Drive is more than a privilege, an honour, or a life-changing experience. Somehow it's a combination of all three, and an affirmation of one's commitment to excellence in broadcasting. And that goes double for you, dear listener.
I really feel that we'll
be
in action.
The Midweek Drive, each Wednesday at 5 p.m.
I should have started off with that kind of statement. Exactly, it's just good. 50 ways to say goodbye by train. Not so much leaving your lover, but that was Paul Simon. And upcoming now, somebody who will always say hello because he's a wonderful Canadian soul, even though he's based in Nashville. How are you, Cameron Tilbury?
Yeah, I'm real good. How about you?
Good. Splendiferous, marvellous. The thunderstorms earlier in the day have given way to a whole new ethos, and we're just breathing in the sheer joy of Lincolnshire weather, as is our wont, really. So it's great stuff from that perspective.
I'm picking up a touch of sarcasm there.
No, never, please. No. In no way, Jose, somebody would want to say. can I formally introduce you to Professor Gail Vanstone? Gail, which part of Canada are you originally from?
I'm from the province of Ontario, and I was born in the second smallest city in Ontario, Owen Sound.
Now,
okay, you're from a little further north than me. I'm from Ontario, and I'm originally from a little town outside of Hamilton.
Which one?
Ancaster.
Huh. I've been there. Hi, Cameron.
See, there you go. You can do whatever show in any part of the world. It's a bit like Geordie's. You get a couple of Canadians together and it all bonds. Splendid.
Except you can understand what we're talking about. You can't understand what the Geordie's are talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, let's just let's move on from that little perspective, neatly so. So, Cameron, any questions you'd like to put to Gail, who's actually making her debut on the Midweek Drive today? We started off obviously with Professor Brian Winston, who's also in the studio. Hannah O'Brien, Lord knows where she's actually gone, but still, never mind, probably sort of stressed out after two of the events we were due to be covering were cancelled last week. The Great Yorkshire Show, of course, this upcoming CLA Game Fair. So whom do you wish to go to?
Well, I don't want to ask any questions of the good professor because she's being part of this show, so she's just going to have lots of questions of her own. And left scratching her head most of the time, like we all.
It's all to do with meaning. That's the bottom line of this particular story. It's meaning. I tell you what, shall we actually move along and actually go straight to what you were referring to on Facebook earlier today? I say earlier today because I'm looking at the studio computer at present and it's just a black screen and it's just frozen up completely. So it's astonishing that that thing should actually happen with modern technology, but it has. It's amazing. But I do know you were very keen to actually promote a certain Brad Davis.
Yeah, Brad Davis. We had a lot of work with him over the summer here already with CMA Music Fest because he was backing up one of the artists that we look after, Pete Kennedy. So he was doing a lot of dates over the couple weeks of CMA Music Fest with Pete. But Brad has been around for a while. He's a Texas boy and has played with Marty Stewart's band. He has played with Billy Bob Thornton's band, the Boxmasters. And in fact, is really good friends with Billy Bob. And he's covered an old Steve Miller song called Jet Airliner. And the cool thing about this is the drummer on this track is Billy Bob Thornton, the actor. So have a listen. Let us know what you think.
Brian's beginning to nod off quietly in this particular routine. Brian, I take it country music, not necessarily your forte.
No. I like Billy Bob Thornton. I think he's a wonderful, wonderful actor.
I can't wait to hear it.
Well, then, here it comes. Don't care if it's too far away. Oh, big old jet airliner. Cause it's here that I gotta stay. Oh, big old jet airliner. Don't care if it's too far away. Oh, big old jet airliner. Now, I do know that you don't want to analyze lyrics over much. But big old jet airliner, carry me away. Not exactly Shakespearean, Cameron.
Well, it sort of is. It's just a new way of saying to fly or not to fly. That is the question.
Sorted.
There's some
whether
great harmony.
Whether it's nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of the air sickness bag.
So true, exactly. It's a very, very crucial aspect on that particular perspective. Gail has a little question for you, which I said, I've got total confidence you know the answer to this one.
Brain dead over here. But I was just thinking, there's a lot of great music coming out of Texas. There's a group who won the Polaris Award a year ago. Their first LP was called The Suburbs. Their name is Arcade Fire.
Yeah, I believe Arcade Fire, actually Canadian. I think they're from Montreal.
But they are in Montreal, but there are two brothers who come from Texas.
Okay, cool. I did not know that. I knew they were based out of Montreal, but I didn't know.
Yeah, they are. They are. One of them fell in love with a Cajun girl, and so they're in Montreal producing music, but the two brothers are originally Texans.
There we go. You see. Well, it's nice.
Yeah, a lot of great music does come out of Texas. It's almost like their own little world there. Texas is just so big that you can make such a living just playing Texas.
I'm very confused by this story. What do you mean he fell in love with a Cajun girl and finished up in Montreal? I thought they were Acadiennes rather than Cajuns. I thought the Cajuns were surely in New Orleans and parts like that.
Well, actually, Cajun is a sort of adaptation of the word Acadian.
Yes, of course, yes. But I'm my limited knowledge of the Maritimes, etc. I thought people were called Acadien rather than Cajun.
I am just wondering how we got to the Maritimes from Texas.
Well, via this Cajun girlfriend, right? I mean, it's perfectly obvious to
me. It's the satellite navigation system that actually takes us there. You know, you just have to put faith in the whole
thing.
Don't
talk to me about satellite navigation system.
Well, I tell you what, I'll give a little clue in terms of one of our co-presenters from Birmingham who has bonded with yourself. And again, she hasn't been with us, obviously, since she wrapped up for her Level 1 American Studies student. She's going into Level 2. Of course, we're referring to... enough of that. Could you identify the singer who was actually chuntering out? Cameron.
Oh, that Daylight Katie, that was Gordon Lightfoot.
Exactly. So we did a piece over the weekend here, and he claimed never to have heard of Gordon Lightfoot. I mean, Lightfoot? Actually, Lightfoot. All the stuff there. We might have a Gordon Lightfoot tune coming up later on. I'm thinking of The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, actually.
Oh, you have to go to the... You have to use the gent. Because over here, you always... They put on the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald that the announcer had to go out and use the facilities.
Yeah, all right, fine. Just because we don't have an assistant to actually deal with the transatlantic calls, which necessitates me trotting out of the studio, dialing up America, and then sending them back through. It's all right. We can cope with it. Don't worry. It'll all be well. All will be well in the world. Moving onwards, Brian, have you got any questions you want to put to Cameron?
Not particularly, no. I think it's interesting the way that these the music manages to cross all these borders which were once so profoundly different. That seems to be one of the characteristics of... Is it, do you think, because of the record industry more than anything else, or radio? I suppose it must be, really.
I don't think it's down to the industry or radio so much as it is... Well, the record industry, yes, in that it's not like it used to be, and artists are taking much more control of their own product now, and looking at the world as one huge audience. It used to be, especially in the country music field, artists very rarely went out of the country where they were from. Even some of the ones that are still hot now, like George Strait, I mean, he really doesn't go outside of the U.S. or Canada. But artists all over are realizing, hey, this is a worldwide market, and we've got to reach out and touch absolutely everybody. So I think that's what's broken down the borders. For them to survive, they need a worldwide audience.
Do you think it matters where folks come from if they suddenly decide they're hillbillies or whatever?
I don't think it matters. You have countries like Australia and Canada where they have very strict content regulations. In Canada... radio has to play 35% Canadian music, and in Australia, I believe it's 25%. So it's harder for artists. What was actually put in place to help those artists has probably hurt them, because now, for example, in Canada, instead of a Canadian artist competing for one spot out of 40 on a chart, they're competing for one spot out of 8, because the station isn't going to play much more than what the government mandates them to do. Canadian-wise.
All right.
So it's a very tight... The competition is huge for them to do that.
As indeed you've commented to some of our international listeners when they've been saying, we wanted more country music. You said, Siren isn't quite like that. It's a different kind of station. They do things differently in England.
Yeah, but England is... I love what happens in the UK and Ireland and Europe as far as country music, because... As in the radio aspect, you're not having to go through a lot of music directors that are giving artists excuses for not playing their music. You're going right to the guy that loves the music. So he loves it or doesn't, and you get that right up front. So it's much more honest, I think, than what happens around in other places.
Not every station, to be fair. I mean, there are those of us who obviously still actually acknowledge the fact that it's 10:30 in London, you need to actually unplug the electricity no matter who's playing. That's by the by. After all, it was just a Newark person, wasn't it, and some sort of bloke from Liverpool. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Cameron Tilbury?
I certainly have.
Splendid. Are you ready to join us next week? When in the studio, we'll have Malcolm Tomlinson and ace author Sarah Hammond, who's just sent me a copy of her text, The Night Sky in My Head. Step backwards, witness the murder, finds the truth. Could almost be a theme in itself,
now,
really.
Is that the night sky or the night guy?
You know, it's the night sky. Are you claiming as a Canadian to actually sort of pour scorn upon the enunciation, pronunciation and such like of a British broadcaster here, Cameron?
No, I'm just trying to clarify because there was so much confusion with the Jimi Hendrix song, Excuse Me While I Kiss the Sky. I just wanted to say...
Oh, Lord, I don't know where we're going. Bottom line, you will return?
I will.